Ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen. Your attention, please. Your attention, please. Your attention, please.
And now the moment we've been waiting for is here.
Hello, Nelson and Tasman. Welcome, everyone. It's my pleasure to introduce our next guest to our show, Evolving Health. I have my lovely sister-in-law joining me today, Mary O'Malley, who's a teacher, a motivator, a mother of two gorgeous children who are now adults, a sister, a friend, and a counsellor. The list goes on. Artist, gardener, everything. Mary is passionate about helping people build empowered lives and works towards benefiting individuals through holistic counselling theories. So tell me a little bit about yourself, Mary, your own experiences that have inspired and motivated you to become a counsellor.
Okay, thank you, Sam. And hello, Nelson. It's lovely to be down here. I'm down from the North Island. What inspired me to become a counsellor? As I've got older and worked through life and the things that have happened to me, there have been times when I have felt a need to go and talk to somebody. And innately, I knew that I needed to go and talk to somebody who had some experience in helping me understand and get me through those difficult times. And the first time I really experienced counselling and developed my understanding of counselling was when I went through a marriage breakup in my early 40s, and the feeling of sadness and fear and not knowing where I was going to go next led me to, I started to ask around, and I was referred to a wonderful woman who didn't actually charge very much, and for that I'm eternally grateful because I didn't have a lot of money at the time. But she gave me the skills to get me through that time. She just listened. And I realised how empowering that was for me because she guided me to a place that I was able to feel a lot stronger. And at that time, I was feeling very, very weak and vulnerable. And then later in life, I had gone through a situation where I needed some help with a difficult relationship. And again, I struck a wonderful counsellor who helped me once more. And I think through that, I realised that I also had those skills, that in my own counselling with those women, I could see that we connected really well and that I had this ability also to be able to listen and understand myself very clearly. And so I guess my own self-experiences of marriage breakup, children, moving towns, I moved from Christchurch to Auckland, that actually led me to where I am today.
That's fabulous. And so you have all those life experiences and your own trauma, which I think generates more empathy, doesn't it? Because I was just reflecting on that last night, and there's a book called Language of Emotions, and it's actually understanding your emotions, isn't it? So when you've gone through therapy yourself, it becomes more insightful about what your emotions actually mean, because we're very emotional beings, and then we're taught through our own conditioning, through our own childhood and our own parents and different generations of parents to shut down those emotions. And, you know, you're of Celtic origin, so very stoic backgrounds as well, that you just head down, get on. But I just want to touch on a point which I think is quite unique to you with your own maturation in life and your experiences and the experience of motherhood and being a high school teacher and what skills that brings to counselling. Tell us more about that.
Well, many of the people listening today will be parents and some of them will be mothers. And we all know that being a mother, there's this real balancing act. And I find that I was a solo mother for many years. And I think for those of you out there who are solo mothers, you will also realise that this balancing act is even more difficult because you have this need to put in boundaries around your children, particularly when they are going through the teenage years. And yet you also want to be this loving, in inverted commas, I guess, friend to your children. And I think what I learned with my children was to give them enough freedom to be able to express themselves, but then be able to rein them in when I felt the need to do so. And that for me was quite a time of insecurity, because doing that by myself, I wasn't sure if I was doing it enough or too much or whatever. What I have today is my children have both grown up and moved away from home. I've got one child who actually lives in Canada. And they will regularly ring me and we'll have these long conversations. And I think that somewhere along the way, I must have done something right because they very often will ring me for advice when they're going through difficult times. And as a mother, I think the experience has given me those skills for listening and understanding, which are so important in counselling.
Absolutely. And that highlights quite nicely that stress is such a huge factor in our modern day life, and we're seeing more mental health problems than we've ever seen. And it's perhaps that media is highlighting that more. We're becoming more supportive and acknowledging that people are struggling more in the world with mental health. But what kind of trends do you see in your clinical practice?
Well, I've worked mainly with two groups, and one is students in high school, and the other one was with women who I would say were suffering from, they were unemployed women who, because of that, had huge fears around not just the future, but huge fears around the next day and where the money was coming from. Both of those groups had stresses. They were very different stresses. Student stresses were largely around friendship groups and NCEA qualifications, all those kinds of things, their future. And for the women, their stresses were often around dealing with their children by themselves and financial things. The things that I think they both had in common, and this is the thing that I think is the underlying cause of stress in our society, is that we make comparisons and we look at other people, and that is totally understandable. I do it myself, but it's not helpful. Mm. And I feel that in my practice, what I try to do is to get people to accept the situation that they're in. And people listening might go, well, that's all very well. You know, the situation I'm in at the moment is unacceptable. And of course, for many of you, it will be. But sometimes there's nothing we can do about that at the moment. And by looking at other people, it's not helpful. So I try to focus people on helpful thoughts rather than unhelpful thoughts. And I do think the most important word that I come back to all the time is acceptance. It's acceptance of our own weaknesses, our own frailties, our own situation. Because if we don't do that, we're always fighting against ourselves. Mm. And that's where our discomfort most comes from. Because if we're accepting of ourselves, no matter our situation, then we're a lot more comfortable with life. And, you know, I think in today's practice, there is a lot of, for me anyway, a lot of emphasis on acceptance and then perhaps committing to that and finding ways that we can move forward with what we have. And also, when we talk about acceptance, we can also look at the positive things that we have, because even in our worst situations, we bring something ourselves that we have, some kind of strength that we can work on. Yes. And so understanding of self, both our positives and the things that are difficult, are really important, I think, in dealing with stress.
That raises some really interesting points, doesn't it? When we focus on women and the burden that a lot of women face to be all things to all people all of the time. And we had a brief conversation last night in amongst a five-year-old and a seven-month-old on how women, maybe we need to speak up more about what our needs are. And so by accepting that we're vulnerable and accepting that perhaps we're needing a little bit of help, and once you reach that point and you can sit comfortably with that, then that in itself is quite a healing process, isn't it?
Yes, it is a healing process.
Yes.
And, you know, I think when we live in this life at the moment, you know, this idea of instant gratification.
Yes.
And I often look back at my parents and my grandparents and think that, I don't know, they're not around to discuss this now, but I don't know whether there was that same emphasis upon, I want it now, I need it now.
Yes.
And in particular, this need to be happy. This fixation with happiness. Mm. You know, and I often say to my students who say to me, you know, I'm not happy. And I go, well, do you ever have times of happiness? And they will say, yes, they do. And I go, look, if we were happy all the time, I think sometimes people would look at us and think we're a bit half-witted. You know?
Yeah.
Because happiness, you were talking about the language of emotions. Mm. Happiness is a part of an emotion.
Mm.
But we have other emotions that make us human. And I think if we acknowledge those other emotions, then we don't have this mindless need to be instantly gratified, instantly happy, instantly perfect.
Yes.
You know, and that life is always positive. Life is a series of ups and downs. And I believe that unless you have the downs, you can't actually experience the ups.
No, you can't experience happiness unless you've had a flatter day. Absolutely. And I know from my own practice as a naturopath that self-responsibility for care is key. And I think it's great that we're finally waking up to that emotion. You know, it's not about nutrition. It's not about what you put in your, you know, in your mouth all the time. It's not about the car you drive or the house you have or the phone you have. And materialism is so yesterday. And we're waking up to how emotions are key to feelings, aren't they? And that is happiness, that is sadness, that is joy, that is, you know, feeling a bit depressed. And we're seeing more and more individuals diagnosed with depression. And I do wonder if it's around, if I don't feel instantly gratified, then therefore I'm depressed. And John Schumacher does write an interesting book called Happiness. It's an epidemic is the title. And I highly recommend reading that book, which talks about instant gratification and why it is becoming a problem in modern day living.
Mm. And there's another wonderful book. I don't know the name of the author. I can't remember, but it's called The Happiness Trap.
Oh.
And it's that same idea that, yes, you know, we have to accept that we're human, and we have to, as humans, we do have that huge range of emotions. And I think that's the wonderful thing about being human. I enjoy being with somebody who is open and able to express that they are feeling sad.
Yes.
Or they are feeling angry.
Yes.
And I think particularly in New Zealand society, particularly the influence perhaps of our English forefathers, is that the stiff upper lip, that you don't show your emotion, and I don't think that's healthy. And you said earlier about being Celtic.
Yes.
And, you know, not just the Celts, but there are many other societies who do show their good, gutsy emotions.
Yes,
and,
yes,
and they are blamed for that. They're put down for that.
Yes, yes.
Whereas I think that's wonderful. Yeah, I love people that are like that.
Absolutely. And they seem healthier, you know, just to make a sweeping statement. But yeah, there's definitely something in being more self-expressed, isn't there?
Mm.
Now, there's lots of types of counselling, but you have done the Rogerian counselling. And just briefly, can you tell us why you would recommend this type of counselling?
All right. Rogerian counselling was developed by a man called Carl Rogers, who talked about empathy, congruence, which actually means, I guess, that we move towards a more balanced self, and an importance on understanding and self and regard.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a client-centered counselling where emotional expression is encouraged, and the role of the counsellor is not to suggest, perhaps, or push the client in a certain direction, but to actually guide the individual to find their own solution. Because I do believe that deep down, the only person that knows us well is ourselves.
Yes.
And we know our own answer. And I find in counselling that when I may make a suggestion, you can tell whether they agree with you or whether they don't, whether it's from within them or whether it's my suggestion, and I will back off because I will read that.
Yes.
So client-centered counselling enables a person to find their own solution.
Yes.
And I'm a bit like a cheerleader. I'm on the sidelines encouraging them to find where they are going, because that's their truth. And if they find their truth, they will, I believe, find their answer quicker and have a much healthier life.
We'll have to have you on again, because we could talk about more. So that'd be great. Next time you're down, we can talk again. But we have hit the ground running for 2019, where people do start to contemplate pending change for the year ahead. And if you would like some more information, you can contact Mary on her Facebook page, Mary O'Malley Counsellor. And Mary does offer online consultations, so you don't have to be Auckland-based to reach out to Mary. But thanks for coming along, and Evolving Health, Tuesday morning at 11 o'clock and replay Sunday afternoon at 1:40, only on Fresh FM. Thanks, Mary.
Thank you, Sam. And thank you, Nelson.
I have something to tell you.
Hey!